This is King World News. I'm Eric King, and you're about to hear another incredible interview with the legendary Jim Sinclair. Remember to go to our homepage at www.kingworldnews.com for more interviews. Where this week we have the number one trends forecaster in the world, Gerald Celente. We also have Bill Fleckenstein from Fleckenstein Capital. And where last Tuesday we released an interview with Harry Markopoulos, a national hero, the man who brought down Bernie Madoff. Joining us now is the legendary Mr. Gold, Jim Sinclair, founder of JSMindset.com and chairman of Tanzanian Royalty Exploration. This, as you well know, Jim, is a cycle where confidence is lost in paper. And that has been a theme of your writings very recently. So I want to focus on that and the subsequent relation and reaction that we'll ultimately create in the gold market. For all of the people who will bombard the site from all over the world to hear this interview, can you give them an idea of how bad, Jim, the final panic out of paper was, which set up the final manic surge upward in the price of gold? What were your memories of the fear of paper in late 1979, early 1980?
Well, I think the accelerant on the masses that were looking at gold, but at a distance, not involved in Main Street, not necessarily in the financial world. And bear in mind, things were back and then a little less easily communicated as today. So the item which created, in my opinion, the final rush was, for 24 hours, the dollar wasn't accepted in Europe. And bear in mind, in those days, it was Asia wasn't there. It was Europe and the U.S. It was the Western economies. And the lack of acceptance of the U.S. dollar in Switzerland, Germany, London, etc., so affected a general public that set off a tremendous demand for gold itself, for futures, and even for shares.
People were lined up around buildings, Jim. I think we were talking just before we kicked this off that some of the folks, literally their bumpers were scraping as they would try to pull out of the driveway because they had so much metal in back, probably silver doing that to them, right, because of the bulk. But the fear was enormous, wasn't it, Jim?
Well, the fear is another word for collapse of confidence. And there were lines around the block at the Union Bank of Switzerland, at that time one of the main banks of the world. They actually in Switzerland went to negative interest rates. If you wanted to have Swiss francs in a bank in Switzerland, you had to pay rather than the entity paying you. So it was negative interest rates and the fact that the dollar wasn't accepted for 24 hours that really lit the fuse, if you will, behind the stampede that then took place in the late 70s.
You, as everybody knows by now, I'm sure, liquidated for the Hunts. And they called you in, the government did, and said, look, we need a ringer. Let's get Jim Sinclair because we've got to liquidate this. And we need to do it in an orderly fashion, right? So they pulled you in. But you knew the Hunts. And I'm not saying there wasn't manipulation. You and I know there was. But this was a guy who believed that the system was coming to an end, that it was broken, it was going to break, and it was going to collapse, correct?
That's the thesis that they believed, and a thesis that many others held at that time. But what the Hunts were was basically bulls in a china shop. The mistake that they made was not having an exit plan. They were good guys, and they were no more manipulative than the Comex is every day.
Right. So then when you say they had no exit plan, that was predicated on the fact that they thought the dollar was going into oblivion, correct?
Well, you know, when silver comes up from under $4 to over $50, if you had an exit, there is no exit plan. You become the major owner of silver. To whom do you sell it? They may have expected a public to come roaring in, but then at $50 or back at $4, the price of silver, the highest asking price I saw was $54 an ounce. Gets a little hard to buy up there, especially back in those days. And that's an example of running a business. And these are all businesses, whether you call it speculating in silver, but they were in the silver business. Every business has to have an exit formula. Anybody who gets an idea in a business to do something and hasn't already thought, what if it goes wrong, and have an exit formula for it, put themselves, I think, in harm's way. Now, what would be the exit formula at 54 in silver? It's basically, to whom do I sell it? You turn around and the market ran ahead of them, probably in short covering, most likely short covering by the professionals. And you turn around to sell it. It's like the two guys trading diamonds. If one walks away, what's the value of the diamond? So what they did is they didn't have an exit formula. What do you do if? Decided ahead of time on what profit they wanted to make from doing this. So having no exit formula, firmly believing their own case, buying silver continually, eventually getting the COMEX short, and that basically is the board of directors, taking the COMEX to the wall. One morning we come in, and the COMEX has novated the contract, meaning they have said unilaterally that the silver contract calls for delivery, calls for this, and no more. Sellers only. Sellers only. Now, where's the price going to go when the stuff is trading in the 50s? When a board of directors says, sellers only. Well, that was the end of that.
Okay, so the mistake was in not having an exit plan and just assuming the dollar was going to zero. But what about the vilification of the Hunt brothers? What was that about?
The vilification of the Hunts, I think, was undertaken so that in civil court, under contract law, even though it's absolutely so that you can't change a contract unilaterally, if you can vilify the person enough, it's probable that a civil suit will fail. So in my opinion, it was the novation of the silver contract, which was the top in silver, and also, by the way, that was the top in gold.
Jim, you still, as I recall, you were able to call that top to the day. When everybody was panicking, how did you do that?
Knew it ahead of time. It used a formula then dealing with the fact that gold's purpose is to balance the international balance sheet of the country holding it. Purpose of gold then was to, because the dollar was the major reserve currency, was to balance the balance sheet, the external balance sheet of the United States. And it was a simple computation. In order to do that, back in 1974, and taking some assumptions, I had an ad in Barron's, which said gold 900. You know, I tend to be consistent in my beliefs. I don't waffle back and forth. So when gold approached 900 and silver was at 52, 54, it was fully priced.
Wait, let me get this straight. In 1974, you ran an ad in Barron's calling for gold at 900?
I did, sir. Yes. But I've been saying 1650 ever since 248 in 2000, 2001. It's my nature.
Jim, I want to talk about Bunker Hunt just a bit more because it fascinates me that you were called in to help handle that situation. Bunker Hunt was actually once considered the world's richest private individual. I don't know if people are aware of this or not, but his fortune was estimated at between $8 and $16 billion, which is a lot of money today. But he was worth this, Jim, back in the late 60s.
Well, that's enormous back in the late 60s.
Basically, the situation is as follows. You're aware of this article, Jim. I'll link it from the interview page so people can look at it. There was an article a year ago, and they went in to interview Bunker Hunt, and they had his wife there. They had his biographer there. And here's a couple of lines, and I just wanted to get your comments on this. But here's a quote. Bunker and Herbert really did think we were going to have an inflationary depression, end quote. And that was Carolyn Hunt, his wife. And she says here, quote, and that silver was a reasonable thing to buy, end quote. Let me read one more quote, and then I want to get your comments, actually. Bunker Hunt believed, this is his biographer, Bunker Hunt believed, Hertz said, that apocalyptic days were approaching, and they would render paper money worthless.
There was no question that they absolutely believed that, and it wasn't a conclusion that didn't have some merit at that time. But you have to know these people. They're not financial characters that we have today. They were two solid individuals. They were more of the common man than they would be of the Greenwich-style hedge fund traders we have today. They really believed their case, and they never took delivery, never intended to take delivery, and constantly rolled these thousands upon thousands upon thousands of contracts forward as they came due in the next delivery month into position. So it's well said. There's nothing that Carolyn said there that isn't absolutely true.
Also from the article, the Hunts were vilified as greedy speculators who had attempted to manipulate the market. Quote, I think everybody was looking for a whipping boy, Miss Hunt said, and unfortunately, Bunker was it. And this was from Bunker, quote, they were blaming us for the price going up, Hunt said. But there were probably a couple of 100,000 people that were buying silver, end quote. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Bunker Hunt and his brokers were very well known on the floor. And obviously, when there's a big bull in a bull market, every time there's some identification that that's the one buying, then every speculator is doing the same thing. So the effect that appeared to be running a market was really the fact that there were many people running ahead of him in the market. I don't believe they ever intended to manipulate the price higher, but rather they thought the price should be higher. And the eventual run up to 52 to 54 in silver was not a product of them running it up. I believe their buying stopped in the 30s. So, no, I don't buy the case that Bunker and Herbert were running the silver market. I think that there were many people running ahead of them in the silver market.
But they certainly were vilified. Looking back on this now and knowing everything that we've talked about and that you've chronicled over at jsmindset.com, Jim, do you think that Bunker was right, but he was just a few decades too early?
Well, it's obvious he was right, and he was a few decades too early. And Bunker and Herbert were the original bulls in a china shop.
Meaning, as they said here, that apocalyptic days were approaching and they would render paper money worthless. Is that true today?
Well, it certainly is it has a great deal more sound reasoning behind it than we had back in the 70s. The attack on currencies, such as Greece now, by the credit default swap derivative, is the same thing as declaring war on Greece. What's the difference of whether you level Greece by using bombs or you level Greece by pushing them over the brink financially? One currency after another will be hit, especially if Greece goes down. And eventually, the U.S. dollar and the pound sterling will be hit. The U.S. dollar by a mechanism of using the CDSs against state debt. And what's the difference between the state of California and Greece? The answer is the state of California is a bigger bankruptcy. There's so much more truth to it now, and we are headed towards a world one singular currency, more so than existed even in 1979 and early 1980. The handwriting on the wall now is glaring. While back in those days, there was a possibility, but bear in mind that as we went into late 79 and 1980, we went to 14 7/8 on 10-year money. And as one person said back then, that would suck money off the moon. Volcker once kidded with a former partner of mine that he said, you two guys, you're the gold guys, I got you. And my former partner said to him, no, Mr. Volcker, no, Chairman, because when we saw you coming, we got out. And, you know, there was a change in circumstances which they could have seen, but didn't.
Moving on to somebody else that was in silver that was a bit peculiar was an individual we won't name, but he had obviously a large position in the physical silver market. Let's just say over 100 million ounces. And there used to be a lot of trading shenanigans that would go on with silver between $4 and $5, where, as you see today, the commercials would pick the pockets of these technical funds. Was that individual? It's always been speculated that he was involved in that.
The individual is a major, well-known money management in the U.S., and I'd say that 4 or 5 was more of a technical game. You know, you could cause to happen if you had a significant physical or forward position. You could simply fill the buyers at a certain level. If you did it continually, what you'd have is multiple tops, and people would simply sell against that. There were many significant brokerage firms following that, some of which have since gone broke, in fact, gone broke about a year ago. And the firm, too, was following the same mode of transaction. And when you have one or two large entities doing that, yeah, if you're a money manager and you constantly make a dollar on silver, the theory is why not?
And what about all of a sudden this individual had 40 million ounces, I think was supposed to still be delivered to him. That was coming due. A little trouble arose with one of his entities that he was involved in. And all of a sudden, forget the 40 million ounces, you can have my other 90 million ounces, and the problem goes away.
Well, I don't think it would be as clear as that. If someone was to give you a call, and let's say some undersecretary of the Treasury gave you a call, and said that, you know, the last thing we really want at the present time is to see the price of silver continue going up as it has been and drop it right there. You might, if you were well enough positioned, to call the Secretary of the Treasury or the Chairman of the Federal Reserve and just say, you know, you fellas really object to that price? Confirm what you're going to do. Life in Wall Street is tit for tat. You sell out your position, make a small profit, don't take a loss on it, and you expect a payback of some sort. I mean, this whole financial world is tit for tat, and you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
This was from late February, and I'm going to go through some of these writings of yours in the last few weeks. It's all very current, but it's, I think, important for the listeners to understand. Quote, the final pillar in the gold bull market is a bear market in U.S. Treasuries. The increase in the discount rate to 0.75% is driven by market realities and a desire to be able to sell U.S. Treasuries as foreign demand falls off. The bull market in gold moved from $400 to $887.50 in the 1970s as interest rates rose from 3% to 14 7/8% on 10-year money. Once again, the knee-jerk reaction is to sell gold and buy the dollar. Be assured this must happen because the final pillar is falling in over $1,000 gold. You can look at Armstrong's $5,000 as quite possible. Stay the course, end quote. Inexperienced gold investors get nervous and are flushed out because they become afraid as rates rise and there is an accompanying press campaign that gold will then collapse. They don't understand the reality of this cycle. You correctly are explaining the final pillar in the gold bull market is a bear market in U.S. Treasuries. Can you elaborate on that, Jim?
It goes back to what we were discussing at the beginning of the interview. The reason why you would have a bear market in U.S. Treasuries would not be solely the fact that interest rates are rising, but more so the fact that there's less confidence in the U.S. dollar and therefore less demand for U.S. Treasury instruments. It really is that everything we're dealing in, everything we're trying to protect ourselves against, is based in the confidence in paper currencies, the confidence in fiat money. I will go back to the fact that when the Federal Reserve raised their rates, it occurred one day after a very strong rally took place in the euro. And this is sort of an incestuous financial community that we have. Not that I'm suggesting that that rate was risen to drive the euro down, but I will say that there's a little bit of a smell to the timing.
When you say smell to the timing?
The trade, they were tremendously short the euro, and the trade went strongly against them when the euro rose over 150 points, penny and a half. And the next day, the Fed raised the discount rate. You know, and then their position was that rates should stay low for an extremely long period of time. Extremely out of character, by the way. So I wouldn't be surprised, or let's put it this way, serendipitous bailing out of a short position may well have taken place after the rise in the discount rate. That would make the euro go down sharply and would add some upward pressure to the dollar. And it was the next day when the statement became public that interest rates should remain low for a long period of time, giving a 24-hour window to cover.
This was from late February, and this was in response to a question you received at jsmindset.com. Quote, total collapse of confidence in paper as a storehouse of value between January 1st, 2011 and June 30th, 2011, end quote. That's within a year. That's upon us now. Paper currencies globally are under these varying degrees of pressure, but in the end, a collapse of confidence in paper as a storehouse of value is in front of us at some point in the future. Having said that, a great deal of what you see in the media is to distract the masses, and they talk about which currency is rising at any given time, rather than focusing on the fact that gold is rising versus all currencies and is the ultimate currency. How important a weapon is the mainstream media for master planners to keep the people distracted and misinformed so they don't turn to gold until it is too late?
The basic political thesis to mass media is never to disturb the social order. And you'll notice it was the same in 1932. If you go back just as a research would go to a library that maintained media publication historically and take a look at the financial publications in the 1930 through 33 era, you find they aren't too much different than what we have today. Everything is fine. It was all going to improve. Every economic figure that came out was a wonderful slowing down of the bad business indicators. Today, we have tremendous efficiency in media. I mean, look at news is instantaneous. If something happened in Pakistan right now, immediately Google Search would be picking it up, and those people who had subscribed to Google Search would be receiving it, either on their iPhones or whatever type of phone they have. Right now, the media is so efficient that a new school, in fact, of economics is functioning. That new school of economics is what we call MOPE, but it's actually a name. It's Management of Prospective Economics, which means that if you can convince the markets to do something, the thesis is you can convince business to do something. And when the wind is at your back, it's not exactly wrong. But when you're facing a storm, it will only serve to create a spring effect by creating a compression, as it were, of the emotions of the public so that when confidence is lost, rather than being a process, it's an explosion. And everything we talk about has to do with confidence in currencies. The value of fiat money lies in your belief that it in fact works. That money can't be turned in for silver or gold or anything else. It's a promise to pay. And as long as you believe the promise in fact would take place, even though you haven't defined pay what to whom, you'll take a $10 bill and believe that in fact you can exchange it for goods at $10 now and maybe into the future the same. Loss of confidence in a currency is, if you would research every example of hyperinflation that's taken place, the sole reason why hyperinflation occurred. Now, that's one of the things that people don't understand. They think that you must have a significant demand for goods and services in order to have a significant impact of inflation. In general, that would be quite correct. But there are these various times in history when loss of confidence in a currency, not an economic event. Understand, loss of confidence in the currency is not an economic event. Yet it is the key point in every experience of hyperinflation for whatever reason. It could have been a war. But for whatever reason, confidence in a currency is lost, the next result is hyperinflation. So the confidence around the world in currencies is going through catharsis, as it were, and the way that these currencies change value at one time would have been considered a total crisis in the currency market, but to have the euro change 150 points in a day today is just, well, that's the market. That can't continue. It's too hard to make money if the value of what you're getting at the end of the day can't be measured or have some degree of comfort in the fact that what you're getting for your business and service is in fact a medium of exchange and a storehouse of value. When confidence is lost, and it most assuredly will be, especially now because of the efficiency of the CDS market, the credit derivative swap, which is an over-the-counter derivative, you can manage almost any currency and eventually the debt of any state you want. Now, it isn't as much being short, let's say, the euro, as it is being short euro debt. And the credit default swap market, if you watch financial TV or listen to commentary from anywhere, is being accepted as the ultimate barometer of the worth of that currency and that credit. So the rise in the CDS market, the more the people have to pay for the so-called insurance, has a tremendous effect on the actual debt of the entity itself. So as the credit default swap rises, this is a weapon, then the value of the currency will fall and the value of the debt will fall because given now in very efficient communication on finance that the CDS market is the ultimate determinant of credit worthiness. Well, in truth, it's a very easily manipulated over-the-counter derivative and is being used and being recognized as being used for currencies. So if, in fact, Greece goes down, and I certainly don't support bailing things out, but I just let's take it in a market sense. If Greece is broken and they don't have money, and that is what's called bankruptcy, if they haven't got the cash, if that goes down, then the rest of the weak euro nations will come under immediate attack and, in fact, are already coming under attack for the credit default swaps dealing with their bond markets and their treasury issues. Eventually, that's going to turn on the United States in the following manner, and is already starting. State debt will be short, and the tool to be used to accomplish the profit will be the CDS market on, let's say, New York's debt, the municipal debt, state debt. That's what the Greeks have been speaking about when they said that all of this is a product of wild speculative gambling on Wall Street. And it is true. This machine, the CDS market, can go around and slaughter any currency it wants to. And the wealth behind this has such a strong lobby that the probability of any change in this is remote at best. So the success in breaking the Greeks will only be followed by Spain and Portugal and Italy and other and the other states. And notice the name that media has applied to these. I think it's actually most disrespectful of a group of countries to call them pigs. But notice how that's been used in the media to set the psychology so that an enormous profit could be made. And I was informed that the profit of covering of the shorts in the euro debt, as well as in the euro itself, after the increase in the discount rate was $9.9 billion.
When you speak of the lobbying power this group has, this is really the old billionaire boys club, now maybe the trillionaire boys club. And these countries are powerless, I would say, against their machine and their media machine globally, aren't they?
I tend to think that the major entities in Wall Street now should be looked at as countries. A war, the first attack coming in a military form, now the first attack is coming in a financial form. Think about this. The financial entities are at war with Greece right now. The intent is to destroy for profit. What comes next? Spain, Portugal, Italy, etc. And after that, pound sterling. And after that, the U.S. dollar.
This was from March 2nd. We're going to stay on the Greece theme here for a minute. Quote, Greece getting flushed means that would enrich the CDS over-the-counter derivatives tool. Immediately, the next target currencies will be attacked by this tool. Currencies will fall like dominoes. At first, the dollar will strengthen, equities will fall, and gold will go lower. However, soon the recognition will come that a disaster has occurred. That is more serious than the Lehman flushing. Confidence in currencies will fall everywhere. Gold will then rise to $1,650 by the same time in 2011, but to $5,000 and perhaps beyond, end quote. You mentioned the fact that the next target currencies will be attacked by this tool, and the U.S. dollar is surely on that list, as you just said.
Via the states.
Right, because the commercials are massively short, the U.S. dollar. You guys have been pointing out at jsmindset.com. They're going to use the same drill, you're saying, as soon as they're done taking down Greece. They're just going to turn the same tools and use the exact same methodology on working and destroying the United States.
First, they'll take out the rest of the weak euro currencies, the European Economic Union. Once that's completed, then it will turn itself onto pound sterling. Finally, it will turn itself on to the states of the United States, because what difference is there between Greece and California, except that California is a much greater economic disaster than Greece's. And the CDS market right now has already begun on all of those entities by beginning in this market to question their financial soundness. When I use the word market, bear in mind it really isn't. CDS swaps are negotiated special performance contracts which only recently began to have some standards. These are nuclear, and there's no difference between launching a nuclear attack on Greece or launching a financial attack on Greece. Both will have the same effect.
Due to extenuating circumstances, this interview was conducted on Sunday, and on the weekends we have a skeletal staff. But due to listener demand, we wanted to get part one of the two-part interview out by Monday. Part two of the Jim Sinclair interview will be out Wednesday of this week. Thank you for joining us on King World News. Be sure to tune in each week where we will have more interviews with the top people in the world.